Thank you very much. It's a real honor to be here in this what's really a very multidisciplinary symposium, looking at a lot of different aspects of crop production and how we can do it better and do it very efficiently. And it's true that my background is pretty much North American humid region, corn and wheat and soybean, and so I am going to be a little bit centric to that kind of a system, while at the same time opening with a few ideas that I think are a little more global. So Vaclav Smil wrote a book, it's called Enriching the Earth, it's about nitrogen, and it's really about manufacturing nitrogen from the nitrogen gas in the air. And in that book he estimates that 40% of the human population would not be alive if we had not discovered how to get nitrogen out of the air and turn it into fertilizer, because the amount of increase in food production that has resulted from making fertilizer out of the air has been what has supported the giant boom in global population. Now, I tell this to people, and there's quite a few who are a little on the skeptical side, and as it happens, we do have a bit of an inadvertent experiment that provides at least some supporting evidence for that. And in North Korea, from 1989 onward, their fertilizer use dropped precipitously. Their grain production was cut in half. Some of you may remember that in 1989, that is when the Soviet collapse began. And the Soviets were providing all the nitrogen fertilizer to the North Koreans, or had helped them also build two small factories that are the basis for how they were able to continue having some fertilizer. But their fertilizer use dropped dramatically, their grain use dropped dramatically, and about 10% of the population died from starvation and illnesses that were almost certainly related to their very low caloric intake. At one point, I think it was like 700 calories a day was kind of the standard diet. They went up and down, you know, kind of prescribing what the diet was going to be for different classes of people, and you know, in terms of what their job was or what their age was or what their health was. So it was pretty rough, and it was because really, far more than anything, they no longer had nitrogen fertilizer to support their rice production. Now, on the other side of the coin is we have done tremendous things with growing food from nitrogen, but have allowed a little bit of it to get out into places where maybe we wouldn't really want to have it. And the Australian sailing team here trying to practice for the Beijing Olympics got a little bit stranded, and this guy is swimming and having salad at the same time. And a second thing that nitrogen can do when it gets away from where we have applied it for food production is go into the gas as nitrous oxide gas. And most of the heat that's lost from the earth, the heat arrives as visible wavelength light. And the way things work is it's always emitted at longer wavelengths, re-emitted, because some of the energy is kept while a longer, lower energy wavelength gets re-emitted. And it happens, nitrous oxide really is good at absorbing infrared light, and so a smaller amount gets out of the atmosphere than would otherwise, and so more heat is trapped on the earth, and we're not sure what's going to happen as a result of that, but we are worried about what's going to happen as a result of that. So now I'm coming back to kind of my Midwestern thought patterns and talking about corn. In North America, we grow a lot of corn. We put more nitrogen on corn than all other crops combined. It's the biggest dollar input into a corn crop for a typical North American producer. I'm not sure, I haven't kept track. Seed might have passed it by now because Pioneer just charges so much.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
It's the biggest energy input, and you may not think of it, but nitrogen fertilizer takes a tremendous amount of energy to produce. We're burning natural gas like gangbusters when we make nitrogen fertilizer. And the result of that is burning natural gas puts a little bit of carbon dioxide into the air. And so it's a big impact on the greenhouse footprint of growing corn, both from the carbon dioxide released during its manufacture and the nitrous oxide that's released after we apply it. And also, it impacts it based on how much carbon we're able to suck out of the atmosphere with our crops. If we don't have enough nitrogen on them, that's going to be a lower number. So efficiency is important for all these reasons. And so how can you use nitrogen efficiently? And I've come down to two factors. One is don't lose it, and it's slippery. The key thing that makes managing nitrogen different than managing phosphorus or potassium is you don't lose phosphorus or potassium, or at least not very much and not very fast, where nitrogen can be a lot and it can be fast. Number two is apply just the right amount, and that is a lot harder to do than maybe it sounds. And so I'm going to go into each of these fairly briefly in order. Number one, don't lose it. How are you going to accomplish that? First way is timing. If you've got a system where it's a humid region system and you get excess water, you can lose it. But the less time there is between the application and the uptake, the lower the chance that that's going to happen. Second is sources and placements, and I'll hit on this just real briefly, but in particular under this situation and also with surface urea, source and placement can matter. So I mentioned wet weather can lead to nitrogen being lost, and I'm not going to go into the chemistry or the biology or anything, but there's two main mechanisms, and soil drainage is a big factor controlling which one might dominate. And another thing, there's really only one other major mechanism other than loss in wet weather, and that's volatilization from the soil surface as ammonia gas, primarily when you're applying urea and leaving it on the soil surface. So with wet weather, one of the things that is changing is we're having wetter weather in the Corn Belt of the U.S. where we apply an awful lot of nitrogen. My analysis using data from the Midwest Regional Climate Center, and I won't show it to you in the interest of time, but it shows that if you map out the area that's above 16 inches of April through June rainfall, going all the way back to 1900, it was flat from 1900 to 1980 and has more than doubled since then. So my take-home message on that is being efficient in the environment that we're in here in the middle of North America is getting harder because the rainfall patterns are making it harder to get that nitrogen into the crop, especially with the dominant management systems. I'm going to show you one field where that happened. It was fall anhydrous supplied a couple weeks later than right now in terms of when in the year it happened. Soil temperature is well below 50, which is kind of the thing that farmers say it should be below 50. And this is what that field looked like in August the following year. And I kind of randomly took this picture on a tour, and at a meeting when I showed it, the guy came up to me and said, "Well, that's my field you showed." And he was kind enough to share his yield map with me. And if you look, you can see that the dark areas in the picture correspond to the orange and red areas that are high yield. And we cut this field into a lot of 20 meter squares, and in each square we measured the color and the yield, and it turned out, yeah, there was a pretty good relationship. And the dark corn yielded around 170 bushels, the whitest corn yielded around 80. Field average was 125, and what I think about this field is if he had realized this was going on, replaced the nitrogen, the whole field could have been at 170. And in fact, if you compare take this line and extrapolate it up to the color of his neighbor's field, it would have been 190. So even his best corn may have been a little bit limited by nitrogen. But overall, it was a big field, and it cost him about $45,000. And that was not in the years of high corn prices either. So he's been very diligent since then about making sure this doesn't happen to his corn anymore. And more and more farmers are realizing that that's an issue that they need to pay attention to. In a small plot experiment on our research farm, this is from 2008, and the corn on the left, we put 180 pounds of nitrogen per acre on the day we planted it. And the right, it got 110 based on, I believe, a soil test. And applied to knee-high corn, and you can see in August, it looks a lot better. You want corn to look dark green and soak up photons and turn it into grain. And this corn was doing that. And we ended up with 44 more bushels with 70 pounds less nitrogen, simply based on that timing and the fact that we were putting it on near when the crop was really going to start actively taking it up. Now, that experiment has been going continuously since 2007. It's continuous no-till corn, and this shows the cumulative yield over seven cropping years. I left 2011 out because we got hail and a drought, but I probably will put it back in because 2012 was a terrible drought, too. So the zero end stands out. The highest yielding treatments over those 7 years have about 3.5 times as much grain produced as the zero end, so nitrogen was a crucial input. If we put it on pre-plant, there were four different pre-plant treatments, And they're all well above the no nitrogen treatment, but they're all well below the side dress. And timing had a huge effect in this. The best pre-plant treatment is 198 bushels behind the worst side dress treatment after seven cropping years. And the average pre-plant is about 300 bushels behind the average side dress treatment. So a huge difference based on timing. Why did that happen? It happened because in 7 years we had five very wet springs. And in the years that weren't wet, timing didn't matter. It was all based on what happened with the weather. And you know, if we get a sequence of years where it's not that wet, it's not going to matter as we carry this forward. And it's funded for a few more years, so we'll have a few more chances to find out. Nitrogen source. There's a big advantage to anhydrous ammonia. And ESN is a plastic-coated urea made by Agrium, and there's also a big advantage to that in a wet year. If you apply those sources on the same day and then any other source, these are going to be the two that win in wet conditions. There's a small advantage to nitrification inhibitors, and I'm a fan of using these products, but what I am disturbed by is farmers buy them and think that they're protected. And that's a gross exaggeration of the reality, because it increases their odds, but it does not protect them when it gets real wet. Ammonia volatilization is a really big issue with urea applied on the surface. Urea is the number one fertilizer nitrogen fertilizer in the world, and there's an awful lot of surface application because it's easy to do, it's fast, it fits in a lot of systems. On average, in the literature review that I did when I started grad school, and every literature review I've done since says the same thing, it's about a quarter of the nitrogen applied that will be lost, but highly variable depending on the environmental conditions in the probably 10 days to 2 weeks after application. And you can get it in the ground and then the ammonia will still form, but it's not going anywhere, and that's fine. You can do that by tillage, you can do it with irrigation, you can do it by injecting the urea, but for the reasons I already said, there's a lot of advantage to putting it on the surface, and then using NBPT is very effective at reducing the amount that goes off as ammonia. Agrotane was the original patented trade name, but that's off patent now, and there are several generics on the market, which I have not studied, but as far as I can tell are quite effective. I say small advantage for ESN, which is the plastic-coated urea I mentioned earlier, and I have to admit I have not done a good job of reading the literature on this. I've seen smatterings, and I know there's more out there, and so I may be off, but I'm pretty sure there's at least some data showing that it helps, and it may actually be in the big advantage category. One of the things that's happened in this arena is there's a whole bunch of products out there that have noticed that Agritain has been very successful and made a lot of money, and they're selling themselves as urea additives to be sprayed onto urea before it's spread on the field. And there's a range, but there's quite a few that are either ineffective or they may be effective, but that's not yet sufficiently proven, in at least my opinion. So that's happened. I can't remember what my target time is.
Their
7 minutes? Okay. So applying just the right amount is the other half, and it's not easy. We'll start with that. The reason it's not easy is because one field may need a lot more than another. One year may require a lot more than another in the same piece of ground, and from place to place within a field, there may be places that need a lot more than others. And I'm going to show you an example from central Missouri. Each one of these colored rectangles is an individual rate response experiment, and you can see I've put one of the rate response experiments off to the right, about 100 bushels of corn with no fertilizer going up to about 150, and the rate that made the most money was 140. And that's color-coded as yellow. And that's about what the farmer was using in this field. So anywhere you see a yellow rectangle, the farmer's rate was good in terms of agronomic and economic performance. But where it's pink, that farmer's rate was low. Where it's red, it was quite low. Where it's green, it was over-application. Where it's blue, it was a substantial over-application. So blue needs less than 80. Red means more than 200. And the farmer's putting on 140, 150. So you know, off by 50% in either direction, a large part of that field. We studied eight fields like this. Seven were as variable as this one. It's not only that the variability was high and that the averages were very different. The averages were very different from field to field. If you averaged all the rectangles in the lowest demand field, it was 65 pounds per acre was the best rate. And if you averaged them all in the highest, it was 200. So it was three times as much nitrogen needed in that field to optimize the production system. The first work like this was done right here in Minnesota by Gary Malzer. John Schmidt, who's sitting right back there, did a bunch of work in both Kansas and Pennsylvania showing that there was wide variability within a field. Larry Bundy of Wisconsin did some nice work showing that there was not a lot of variability in the four fields that he studied. So, and that's, I don't know of any new research in this area, and we don't have a good enough answer, but the evidence that we have is there's places that need a lot and places that don't need much, and they may be close together in the same field. I'm going to skip past this since we're running. No, I'm not going to. The key thing here is this is another one of those eight fields, and there was tremendous variability. About a quarter of the field was below 50, a half in the 50 to 100 range, and a quarter above 100 with no fertilizer. When we added fertilizer, it all evened out. We got a much more even yield because the thing that was creating that variability was variability in how much the soil was giving it, and you can even see that in the aerial photo that is behind the color-coded map of yields, that the west end is a lot darker looking than the east end, and that's because it was giving more nitrogen. So what does that mean? If it's because of the difference in how much the soil is giving from place to place to field, putting more nitrogen where the yield is higher isn't going to explain that. It's not going to manage it. And there's a lot of data out there showing not much relationship between the best rate and yield soil nitrate. In some small data sets, it's pretty good, but my observation is when you get into large data sets, it kind of falls apart. I think crop color is the one that I have seen that holds together the best, although I just saw some data from the project that Pioneer is funding with Newell Kitchen leading it that showed the sensors showed it should be the same rate in most of the fields they were studying this summer, and in fact that was quite wrong. Computer models, we don't know their accuracy, and I'm not sure if we're going to know their accuracy in terms of the commercially available models. I mean, maybe if Pioneer is going to let Newell tell us how theirs came out, we'll know about that one, but that still leaves two that we may not know about. So I'm going to wrap up with just a couple of thoughts about using color to manage nitrogen efficiently. And one way is to do color sensors, and you can see, if you look very closely, some little white dots, and those are some color sensors on the front of this fertilizing machine. And the color that's being measured by those is sent continuously into a computer in the cab. It calculates a nitrogen rate and directs a controller. And on this particular machine, what the controller does is change the belt speed. So if it sees yellow corn, it runs the belt faster to put on more fertilizer. And we've done no more than 55 fields, but the first 55 that met certain criteria are written up in Agronomy Journal. And we got a 2 bushel per acre yield increase. We saved 14 pounds of nitrogen. And we increased efficiency from 67%, which is pretty darn high, and that was with the farmer's rate applied in season to 74% by making the rate better. Aerial photos is another way to potentially get the same kind of color information that's spatially dense. And I'm going to put in a little advertisement here. I have started a new company this year. It's called Envision Ag, and we use aerial photos to diagnose nitrogen need. So you start off with just the aerial photo, and if there's evidence in there of needing nitrogen, you can use it to create a nitrogen rate control file. And right now our biggest market is people who have applied all their fertilizer and they're worried whether they've lost it or not. So that intermediate picture, the one in between, is a yield loss map so that they can assess how severe the problem is before making the decision of whether to go on with more nitrogen. And then the rate control file just goes into the computer in an applicator and carries out the plan to put more nitrogen in the most stressed areas of the field and leave the areas that are not stressed alone. So summing up, we've got to have nitrogen to feed the current population. It is energy demanding, it's expensive, it does bad things when it gets out of agricultural fields. If we can avoid losing it and apply the right amount to everywhere, we can do a great deal to increase how we use nitrogen efficiently. Thank you very much.